Hello, everybody, and welcome to Across the Table 21. My name is Matt Mendoza, and I am your host. This week, we have John Freakin' Rizzo, a writer from back in the old days, who is a pleasure to talk to. I'll keep this short, as this is take two of my intro, and I thank you all for accommodating my chaotic new life in St. Louis. The job I have is a lot of work, especially up front, so I appreciate your patience. As always, I want your feedback. Hit me up on Twitter at Matt Mendoza or via email at acrossthetablepod@gmail.com. Also, be sure to follow the cast on Twitter at AcrossTheCast or on Facebook for the latest news and episodes. Last but not least, leave me a review on iTunes. Reviews help get the podcast to audiences who don't normally troll my site, kccompetition.com or manadeprived.com. And tell your friends about the show, please. Once again, thanks for listening. Look forward to next week and my interview with Legion Events' own Steve Port. On with the show.
I had Greek yogurt, blueberries, pizza for dinner.
Okay.
Pizza Hut. Toast. I saw Mission Impossible. Toast. You're talking about trying to get the levels working here?
Yeah.
I have kind of a low, annoying voice, so that might be kind of difficult.
All right, we are there.
All right.
All right, John. So yes. I'm here with writer, perpetual magic sucker. I don't know.
That's pretty good, yeah.
John Rizzo. I really wanted to have you on, John, because I've been playing for about 16 years, and I really enjoyed your articles, and I felt like you were a personality that a lot of the new players, like a lot of my friends who started like pretty recently, they don't know. So, and you were always a really unique voice in the community in that you wrote these articles that were, they were hated by some, loved by many, you know, like I said earlier, I brought up, you could say that they're self-indulgent way too long.
Yeah, they're pretty messed up, a lot of them. A lot of them, I'm half proud and half embarrassed by most of them. Like, how did I get away with all that? I don't know, it's the unique time. There was the Wakefield void, and you needed some kind of issue, emotional boy, weirdo. Everybody else was straightforward. You know, dex list, you know, and net dex, and I kind of got lucky, I guess, right there in that point.
Yeah, I'm still really, you're reading your backlog of stuff, like, even before I started reading you, like, when you first actually came to Star City, I'm really excited to read Jamie Wakefield's stuff, because, I mean, it sounds like it was also transcendental, perhaps.
Oh, he's got some good stuff going on there, and a couple books too. I don't know if you've read either of his books, but those collections of his articles, and excellent when you're in the bathtub and you got the bubbles going on. You sit back, a little Jamie C right beside you in the bathtub. Just read the whole book in one sitting. Get out, you look like a prune, but you feel better for it.
Yeah. So Rizzo, you have like a kind of a from kind of mysterious background in that I think you're from Pittsburgh, right?
Yes.
And did you, I mean, is that where you've been from your whole life? Is that where you
grew up? Pittsburgh, and within 30-40 miles for about 30 years, and then moved to Maine, and now in Virginia.
Okay. And when you discovered magic, I mean, you've been playing for a really long time. I mean, it sounds like you picked it up really early, right?
Urza Saga, maybe a little bit before then.
And how old were you when that happened?
I don't know, 27, 26, 27.
Okay, yeah, that's what I figured, because I put your marriage at like 18 years, right?
Yeah, you probably know better than I would. Sounds about right, 18 years, I think, yeah.
Wow. And
kidding.
And when did you discover, I mean, you discovered magic then, but what about it really kind of caught your interest?
I really have no idea. Because the first time I played it, I thought it was the most annoying game ever invented. Brother-in-law showed me how to play it. I thought, wow, this is awful. This is embarrassing. This is stupid. And about an hour later, I said, I want to play again. And that was it. And I was hooked for 3-5 years, and then took a break, come back for another couple of years, take a break. You know how everybody does it. Nobody ever gets away. They try, can't escape.
Yeah, I totally understand. I took a 3-year break myself, and then another smaller break, and then
yep,
here I am.
But it's there when you've got that little hole that you need to fill. It fills in then some, and then whenever it fills it too much, you just step back away, and every time you come back, it just seems better.
Yeah. And so you grew up in Pittsburgh, and
yes.
Were you always a like nerd? Let's kind of go back before Magic, like before all that. Who are you, Rizzo? Like, where are you?
That's a good question. I don't think I was ever a nerd. I don't really think I am now. I mean, Magic's like the only nerdy thing that I was ever into. Never really cared about comic books when I was maybe 5 or 6. Recently, you know, the last 10 years, got into Lord of the Rings, Batman, although all the movies, the Avengers. But I don't think I've ever really been a nerd. Sort of, I don't know, maybe an athlete, maybe a brain, but not a nerd. I used to call the nerdy kids nerds. I feel bad about it now. And now that nerds are more accepted, I guess, or at least the fake nerds are accepted. You know, the attractive girls with the glasses on, but they're nerds all of a sudden.
Yeah.
But I don't think I ever really had wrestling, maybe. I used to watch wrestling on TV when I was a kid. Maybe that was kind of nerdy. That's about it. You know, break dancing and DJing and stuff like that, rapping back in the old days, skateboarding. I mean, my dad was kind of fringe, I guess. But that's about it. Magic is about the nerdiest thing.
Well, and
I don't even think it's nerdy anymore.
Yeah, totally. Cool. But you, despite not being a nerd, you seem like you, at least from your articles, you were very culturally savvy. Is that something that's always been true? Like, were you kind of a balance between being someone who was really intelligent and really athletically bent?
Well, that's a tough one. I don't know. It's probably from my parents. My mom was probably pretty far to the left, always with the expand your mind, read and try everything. And my dad was more to the right. This is like, go to work, get a job, and stay out of trouble. So mm-hmm. I guess right there in the middle there, rebel against both of them at the same time. So yes, that's about it.
And did you end up going to college?
I quit 4 times, went 4 different times over a span of about 8 or 9 years. I just hated it. I mean, I stopped going after midterms and still got C's. And I thought, this is a joke? Plus, you know, there was a family business I was involved in, and I didn't really need to go to college. So I punted college 4 times. I don't regret it, because I don't have any student loans. but then the family business went down the tubes and, you know, start all over.
What was that business?
I don't begrudge anybody with a college degree. Good for you. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. What was that business?
It was an industrial weights and measures. It's like anything you can weigh or measure. We sold it and serviced and fixed it. And kind of a niche business. And it was pretty good business for about 50 years, and I took over. Whew. Dunsky.
Okay. What happened? Was it
That's bad economy.
Bad economy.
Too much competition. Steel mills all closed. All the unions ran away. The business just dried up. Plus, I didn't really care. That's horrible to say, isn't it? 50 years, and I get there, and I don't really care about it.
Well, there's a lot.
That's awful. I'm such a prick, kind of.
Well, there is a mounting movement that is examining nepotism in business and, you know, suggesting that it's really not that good to hand your business over to somebody just because they're family. So,
oh, I can agree with that. You got to earn it. You got to want it. And I might have earned it. I really didn't want it. So,
yeah.
Bad times for Becky, I guess they would say, or I would say, 10 years ago.
In college, what about college did you hate? Like, what was it just not challenging?
I just hate authority figures, all of them.
Okay.
Every single one of them ever. I don't know why that is. I don't like teachers. Don't like regimented schedules and raise your hand and this and that. And you have to do this and do this and follow these chapters. It's just, I don't know, kind of a free spirit, although I suck at so many different things. You should be good at something before you become a free spirit, but I guess that's my mom's influence. Phew, just fly off in your own direction.
Do you
figure out what I want to be when I grow up, then I'll be onto something.
Do you think you suck at writing?
No, I used to think that. I think I'm pretty awesome now. I think a lot of my old articles are pretty bad. Parts of them where I read them and go, yeah, that's pretty awesome. But the other parts I think are very iffy. But I've developed, a voice or whatever in the last 15 years. So I feel pretty confident about that. And I had 4 or 5 plays produced and people were like, wow, this is awesome. And then I started to get successful and then I got pissed off because I don't like success or something. Self-loathing, I guess. Maybe I just get bored with success. You know what I mean? Maybe not. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. Kind of weird.
Well, there's always something in everything, I think, that every person needs. You know, I mean, I feel like some of why I do what I do is proving something. Like, mm-hmm. I look at, like, the things that I've put the most effort into at particular points in my life, and it was because I had something to prove.
Yes, and then you prove it, and then what?
And then, yeah, it's just kind
keep
of like...
proving it, who cares? You proved it.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah. I mean, like, I think of, like, my senior year in high school where my mom said, oh, well, you can't get straight A's or whatever. And I was like, all right. So I got straight A's.
Mm-hmm. Well, you got once. You don't have to keep getting them, do you?
No, yeah.
Oh, you do have to keep getting them?
Did I do that? No. Did I continue getting them? No.
Right. You proved your point.
I already did it.
Yeah. See, I got a mom. What of it? Now what? What's the next challenge?
Yeah. So you were married already, and you had did you have a child when you started playing Magic?
I think so. No, that's tough. I don't remember.
Okay. Well,
it's
what did you
close around there?
So you
if
started.
I did, he would have been an infant.
Okay.
He's 17 now, so that would have been right about the time he would be. Maybe he wasn't born yet.
Okay.
That's a real foggy time for me back then. The only way I can really keep up with it is go read my old articles and remember.
Yeah. Which, I mean, kind of going back to what you said earlier with, I actually really admire your early stuff, especially because you were, it felt like sometimes you were putting in your reps. Like, you were just writing, wrote a column every week pretty much for two and a half years solid.
Yep.
And I mean, I definitely agree with you that there are some, like, there's definitely a quality there, but the fact that you did it and you were one of the writers that were actually just doing it, like, you wrote every week, and mm-hmm. I think that you would not have gotten to this some of the stuff that you got to had you not been just pushing yourself for material. And
I agree with that. Yeah, I mean, I did mail it in a little bit sometimes, but whenever you have to write every week, and I didn't do the old 1,000-word column, I had to do the 5,000 words or whatever. Just that it's just a weird time and a weird time in my life and a weird time in the internet and everything. Everything was new, and especially for me, I'd only been online maybe a year or so, mm-hmm. and just weird. It was like a blog post that they paid me for, and so it was really, and Fair was awesome. There was no rules, no restrictions. He was pretty much just do your own thing, and he was awesome for that. He's still awesome. He's still doing it. So
yeah,
he's the man.
And what inspired you to start writing about Magic in the first place? Because you started on the Dojo, right?
How the hell did you know that?
Well, I read your first. I just assumed that you. I kind of put the two and two together that you were on Star City because you had a readership, and then you referenced the Dojo pretty early on. So I just kind of put the two and two together.
Well, that's pretty incisive because I barely remember. I think I had maybe 2 or 3 articles on the Dojo.
Oh, so it was a really short time then.
Yes, maybe 4. I don't know that anybody ever read them. I just applied for the writers' contest and somehow won that. What was the question again?
What inspired you to start writing about Magic?
Oh. Well, that's a really good question, too. I don't even know. Just reading the Dojo, just reading, for hours and hours and hours every day, and you could just never run out of stuff to read. And I don't even remember why I wrote my first article, but I did, and I don't know that anything actually inspired me. Probably Wakefield, I would say, because his articles were pretty friggin' awesome back in the day. So I would say that was probably it. if I had to point to an inspiration, I would say Wakefield.
Oh, gotcha. And what
pushed my buttons?
And what about the 5,000-word column? Like, was like why that long? Like, why? Because your all of your stuff is pretty consistently really long, and I'm just curious about what you mentioned earlier that you didn't want to write the 1,000-word column. You wanted to write the 5,000-word column. Like, right. What was that to you? Like,
well, I think a lot of the people were writing the 1,000-word columns and just a little 4 or 5 page blah, blah, blah. And it kind of pissed me off because, you know, you get to the end of the article and you want to keep going. And, you know, plus you read stuff like Wakefield stuff and it's 20 pages. And I think that's what I wanted to go for. And plus, I knew that would piss some people off because they want the 1,000. They want just a little article, a little deck list, done. So I just sort of like to fuck with people sometimes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just pushed them a little bit. Not really to piss them off that much, just to irk them a little bit. Like if you had a mosquito bite on your neck, I would pick it. Mm-hmm. It kind of hurt, kind of feel good. You'd want me to stop, but as soon as I was done, you'd be like, scratch that again. It feels pretty good.
So, and was that your, was that how you saw your role in the community at the time?
I would say maybe like the spark, the controversial, you hate him or love him. Nobody was sort of like, meh.
Uh-huh.
I'd get emails like, you're awesome, I love you. And other email would be like, I hate you, die. There was very rarely anything in between. Even going to tournaments when people come up to me and, I love your articles. They were awesome. Or why do you write? You're a waste of space. So maybe very polarizing. And I think that's kind of cool. There's nothing to be gained or accomplished by being right in the middle. People just look at you and go, meh.
Yeah.
Like it or hate it.
And on those articles that people hated, or actually on those articles that you hated, that you didn't feel were very good, what did you kind of think when people told you that they loved them? Like they were good.
That was one of the reasons why I quit the first time. I mean, there was like 15 different reasons at one time, but that was one of them when people, little 15-year-old kids, would come to me and be like shaking in my presence. And I was like, what is this all about? And I'm like, okay, can you sign this card? this is ridiculous. I'm just the regular dude. You're shaking in my presence. You're nervous. And oh my God. And I don't know. That hit me the wrong way. I did not want any part of that. Because when I first started, I was the anonymous guy in the corner. Nobody knew who I was. Just go over there and I could people watch in safety. Nobody would mess with me or even talk to me. The little opponents during the match. But I could just be anonymous and that was fine. And I think I'm getting back to that point. Because the last event I went to in Pittsburgh, it's like nobody knew me. Forsythes were there and some CMU guys, and that was about it. Nobody else really knew me, and that was kind of cool.
So do you hate yourself for doing this?
No, I just wanted to talk magic because I haven't in years, and I'm planning on going to 2 events in the next 4 months or so, and I've been brewing for about the last year. This is all in silence, sort of like what I did with the Icarid deck. I'm just so excited to just get it out there. I don't have anything quite that explosive. I guarantee that. But I've been, you know, building decks for a year and watching all the Star City videos, the matches and all that. Just silently, peacefully in my little humble abode for about a year and had nobody to talk to about it. So you threw this at me and I was like, big boner.
Well, we'll talk about some magic, I guess, at some point.
Okay.
I typically don't, actually.
Well, I understand.
So,
try to squeeze a little bit in there.
Yeah, definitely. So, a lot of the columns that you wrote pretty early on, occasionally you would come across like really groundbreaking concepts, like Bruce, like mm-hmm. bringing out the dead. Mm-hmm. When you kind of came across those things, like how did that make you feel?
I don't know that there was really a revelation or anything. I mean, these are things that I've been thinking about since I was, I don't know, 9 or 10 years old. The Bruce
mm-hmm.
and needing to lose or whatever. I mean, I'm, I noticed that really early on. So it was never really like a big awakening for me or anything shocking. It was just like a gradual thing. And the bringing out the dead, pretty much the same thing. Growing up with, you know, straggling family members, odds and ends from family functions. And they exemplify all these things that, and they were just, they hit me at a young age and they just stayed with me. So I don't know that I really felt anything except an awareness. And it just kept developing and developing. And then I just tried to put it into words. And I did probably a fair job of doing that. And that's what I was looking for at the time. Just spit it out there and see if anybody else had any experience with something like that. Turns out that they did. And that was kind of cool.
Were you writing before? Were you writing before you were writing about magic?
No, when I was a kid, I wrote some short stories and stuff like that. And I don't have any of it anymore. And I might have, I don't remember if I was writing magic before I wrote, started writing plays or not, but it was about the same time period. My brother had written a play and he got it produced, and the directors and they just screwed him over. They made changes and all that, and it just pissed me off. And then this might have been about right about the exact same time I started writing about magic, which might have given me some of my attitude. So then, you know, I started writing plays and about the same time, and was mad at the world, I guess, or just mad at the things that I thought were very iffy and needed to be addressed, even though I knew they would be corrected, like net decks and IDs. And half of me is still mad about that, and half of me has accepted it.
Yeah. And why those issues? Why not something in the real life, quote unquote?
Oh, I think the IDs do. To me, it just seems, I don't know. I've been over through this with myself for years and years about IDs. It just seems so repulsive on the face of it. And I understand that you can't have no IDs because then there'll be all kinds of collusion and stuff like that. But uh-huh. Eight-round tournament, we won 6 rounds. We're 6-0. Let's not even play the next 2 rounds. It just seems so repulsive to my sense of fair play and competition. And I get it. When you're the alpha player and you're top 8 guy all the time, your goal is to win the tournament, which, I mean, 10% of the guys are there that can think they can actually win the tournament, maybe 20. Mm-hmm. But on a PTQ, I mean, you have a realistic, very small amount of people who can realistically win the tournament, I would think. And then these guys, there's just 10 or 20 of them or whatever, and it just leaves a bad taste in my mouth that you get that far and then you don't compete anymore. It's like, say Tiger Woods shot, you know, good score for 3 days. And on the fourth day, he says, I'm not going to play these final 8 holes or the first 8 holes, 9 holes. Wow. Been a long time since I watched golf. You know, he sits out the first 9 and then goes plays the back 9. Mm-hmm. It just seems dirty to me. But, I mean, go ahead and do it if you have to do it. I mean, I'm not going to hate you for it or think less of you. I used to. I used to think that people that did that were Satan's spawn, but not anymore. I understand. The neck deck's the same thing. Magic is more creative to me than, you know, people that just copy deck and play it. I mean, more power to you if that's what you want to do. There's room enough for everybody. Just gets kind of pissed off when people don't see it the way I see it. It's supposed to be a creative endeavor that, like I said, fills that hole, that void. Your pain center. You got to fill the pain center, you know what I mean?
How do you... Were you ever one of those people that thought, in the 10 to 20% that you mentioned, that thought they were going to realistically win the event? I mean, you brewed like you did.
The first time I brought the Icarid deck out, I thought I was going to win that tournament. I knew the deck was ridiculous, and even how bad it was, because I didn't have all the cards. I didn't have any fetch lands or real duels or whatever. I knew that it was so much better than every other deck there, and I think I went 3-4 or something like that, mostly because I'm terrible at Magic and a little bit unlucky sometimes. But I thought, yeah, that I was going to win that tournament. I was going to play against Tog decks all the time and just devour them, and it would be so embarrassing to them. And it didn't work out that way, but about a month later it did for everybody else. And so that was, I think that was the one time that I thought I was going to kick somebody's ass.
And you sound, in your articles, you have this kind of jovial, self-deprecating tone. Mm-hmm. Was that ever a mask to kind of hide your disappointment, I mean, and frustration?
Well, maybe. I fully admitted to when I would go 2-5 or 3-5 with a crappy deck that I didn't play test and, you know, and I didn't expect to go, 6-1-1 with the crappy deck. I knew the decks were iffy and that I was not very good. And I think I just pretty much came out and admitted that. Maybe it had a little sarcastic tone, but I wasn't fooling anybody and I wasn't fooling myself. I knew that, you don't put in the work, you're not going to get the results. And when I didn't, which was usually most of the time, or if I did, I was half-assed effort. And, I don't feel bad about it, or I don't feel like I failed or anything, because I wasn't really sure what the goal was, except to just keep plodding along and just see what happened. I didn't really have a clear path.
Okay. And did you have a clear path for your writing career?
Yeah. When I quit after one of the times that I quit and I did the playwriting, took that seriously. The idea was to get, 4 or 5 plays produced in a couple of years, and that happened. And, it's the same bullshit. I mean, there are IDs and net decks in the theater too. I mean, when people don't do things that are different, people do the same shit all the time. People that say, "Is it Friday yet at work?" I want to punch those people in the face, Lunchtime and a big pizza comes. What's everybody else eating? I just want to punch them in the face, because those are the same people that will watch the shows they're supposed to watch. They'll respond how they're supposed to respond, and they don't do anything different. And that's what I like, people that do things different, whether I agree with it or not. Like people that get a lot of tattoos. I will never do it. I don't have a tattoo, but it's kind of awesome. I mean, even though a lot of people do it now, it's just, or the big earlobe things. Then that's not attractive to me. I don't think it's, not something I would do, but people that do that, they just say, fuck it, and just do their own thing. And I admire that. And they don't do that too much in magic, and they certainly don't do it in the theater. I don't think they do it in life. Mm-hmm. Just the same stuff. I mean, look at movies. Look what we got for the next 10 years. Every comic book ever. Until 3 or 4 of them lose $250 million, and then we'll have none of them. And then maybe we can get to real movies again, like Little Miss Sunshine, stuff like that. It's just way out there, and that's like a rogue deck. I like rogue decks and oddball people.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like you, like with the ID article, you definitely applied it to real, like, quote-unquote real life. You definitely extrapolated from it the larger issue that you felt. And the same thing with net decking. Why are you so angry?
I think I'm like, very happy guy. I
mean, okay.
Life is awesome. I love life.
I'm not saying you're angry. I'm just asking. Comes off like that sometimes.
Right. Well, I know. Some things do make me angry. When people just, they get this whole life. It seems like it lasts forever. And you just toe the line. You don't ever step out of the line. You don't ever ask the questions. You don't ever challenge authority. You just do what you're supposed to do. You go to high school, then you go to college, then you get a job, then you get married, then you have kids, then you retire, then you die. Do something a little bit off the beaten path. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And what is the purpose of that? What does that do? What kind of legacy is that? You just lived and then you died. And 11 people remember you, and then 2 people, and then nobody remembers you. And you have nothing to contribute to future generations except maybe your name. It's kind of sad, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, definitely.
It's melancholy.
I mean, I definitely see those people that don't take risks, those people that choose to keep the cushy job and not follow their passion. Like, I definitely understand where you're coming from. I'm just curious about, and maybe this kind of goes back to the anger issue, and not quite anger. Let me clarify. Why are you so concerned with what other people do with their lives when there's like a way you want to live your life? Why, if you're living your life that way, why does everybody else's life concern you so much?
So that's a pretty good question. It's a little hurtful because it's true. I don't there's really no way to answer this without making me look like an asshole, which maybe I am being on this, on something like that. I mean, I maybe because I haven't taken all the chances that I should have, and I know that they don't, so I take out my anger on them. I don't know, some kind of pop psychology like that.
I mean, it does definitely
the older I get, the more liberal I get on certain issues, or the more libertarian, either one of those. It's just, I leave people alone, let them live how they want to live. I get that. But then, you know, the people that toe the line, that still aggravates me. I don't know why.
So do you feel like a lot of people inherently need what you provide, like inherently need that sort of that person who's like enlightened, who like,
because if I'm enlightened,
well, not quite enlightened in, you know, capital E, but somebody who is there to kind of push them, kind of there to make them ask the questions. Because I feel like a lot of your articles, a lot of your writing is very, it's written from a perspective of, hey, like, I did this, don't do this. Like, it's kind of that perspective. I mean, one of the first things that you bring up in Bruce was that you worked this 7-15-hour job. You came home smelling like a metal heap.
Oh, yeah. Like, that was awful.
It seems like you're writing from this perspective of, I hate myself. Don't be the person who hates themselves too.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's quite that far. It's quite, you know, if hate is the right word for, you know, the emotion, the kind of way you feel towards yourself. But I mean, I definitely see this with talking to my little brother and little sister, in that I have those same sort of stories that says, hey, like, don't do this. Like, you know, double major in college if you want to while you're early, or study whatever you want, you know?
Right. You're right. I would not have wished that job on anybody. It was awful. I think a lot of the magic had to do with the ups and downs of where I was in my life. I could be Mr. Searching for Jamie Wakefield when I was way, way happy, and then working the crappy 7-15-hour job, and then I'd be mad. It was like a sounding board, I guess. But, yeah, I think you're right about that. I mean, here's an example for my life. Don't end up like that. I tell my kids it all the time. Don't end up like me. If you end up like me, I'm going to be disappointed in myself and you. So I don't think that, I think they're going to do a lot better than I did. And I don't think that I've done very bad at all.
Uh-huh.
I have a lot of passions, and I've explored them fully, I would say, and had some success here and there. But, you know, basically I did what I wanted to do when I wanted to do it. And sometimes it was awful. And I would probably like people to not have that same experience. Although, they got to go their own way. And, like, my kids are going to make stupid mistakes, and there's nothing I can do about it. And people are going to net deck an ID, and there's nothing I can do about that. So, I'm just, you know, just do what you got to do, I guess.
Do you feel a sort of irony that you're saying so vehemently, be like me, but you're also at the same time sending this message, don't be like me?
I would prefer to say, don't be like me. I mean, I understand where you're coming from. Be like me. Don't play NetDecks. Don't ID. But I don't really want that. I mean, people just question things. See both sides, or just question everything. Again, with the hating authority. And it's what you're supposed to do. You're 6-0-0. You're supposed to ID for 2 rounds. You're just supposed to do it. You're supposed to play the best deck. Stuff like that. Was that you or was that me? Going beep. Probably you. You have fancy equipment.
All right. Oh, I think
stuff like that. I don't know. You're making me ask the hard questions of myself, and I don't really have the answers. And if I had the answers, I would probably be, I don't know, wildly successful or rich or whatever. I'm going outside. I'm gonna smoke me a Philly blunt. You know what I mean?
Oh, you totally.
If I smoke good.
No, not at all.
You hit me with the questions I wasn't expecting. I don't have answers. I'm sorry. I mean, my life is a work in progress, I guess. As is everybody's. It's just, I just maybe have a little more messy parts than most people.
Oh, I definitely understand where you're coming from. I mean, I feel like my own life is this sort of controlled mess where some stuff is working out, Some stuff isn't. It's just, but that's how life is. Like,
well, how old are you?
I'm 28.
Oh, you're still young.
I am still young. Yes.
44. That's not young. No. Well, you're right. I mean, I can still reinvent myself, do whatever I want. I have no excuses.
Uh huh.
But you're a lot. You got kids? You're married?
Nope.
Oh, you got nothing holding you back. Nothing. If you fail, you have nobody relying on you. So you have less excuses than I do, and I got a lot of excuses. Although I'm doing pretty fairly well right now, so I can't complain.
Yeah. So do Berto and Abigail still play Magic?
No. Actually, Berto's actually, he's making videos on YouTube for whatever the shoot 'em up games are, the first person shooters.
Oh, okay.
He's got some kind of sponsorship deals and all that, so he's got like 500,000 views, 3,000 subscribers, something like that. He's doing awesome with that, actually making money. And Abs is just, I don't know that she ever really liked it. She just did it because we did it. Uh-huh. So, yeah. So she plays World of Warcraft online or whatever. So she's got a little bit of the nerd in her. But, yeah, they're both coming along very well. I don't know how that happened. But sometimes you get lucky.
There's that self-deprecation again.
Yes, they succeed despite your best efforts to sabotage them or whatever.
So yeah.
They're doing good. Wife's doing good. Everybody's doing good here.
So, okay, kind of going back to when you learned how to play Magic, what did your wife think of all that? Like, about you pouring yourself into this new thing and writing 5,000 words a week? Like, that doesn't take no time. Like, that takes some time.
Not when you get into it. It's just sort of, I could pound those out in, I don't know, 5 or 6 hours.
Wow.
But she's seen me get into other things.
Like what?
Like music. I was into that. Got the drums, the bass, all the recording equipment. But I've done that 3 or 4 different times throughout my year. Get into that for a couple of years and then set it aside. I still have the amp right in the basement and the drums and all that and little DJ rig. So it's there when I want to come back to it. But she's seen me jumping back and forth between that and the playwriting and the Magic. So that's what she says. My daughter's the same way. Get into something for 2 years, throw your heart and soul into it, then get bored and go into something else.
Now, did that take, I mean, that's kind of abnormal. I mean, a lot of times, like, that's one thing that I've had to struggle with myself is being a Renaissance-type personality in a very expert world where they, you know, they want you to master whatever you're doing. Like,
yes,
you can't just be, like, a doctor for 5 years.
Right.
What, yep. I mean, have you come to terms with that part of your personality? I mean, has that ever caused any conflict between you and your wife? Like, she saying basically, why don't you stick with something?
Maybe in the beginning of the marriage,
after okay,
like the third or fourth thing. But she knows my deal. She's kind of the same way. She gets into little things here and there, and her hobbies and pursuits, and dives into them, and then pushes them away when she gets bored or whatever. So that's why she's an awesome wife, because she understands that. She doesn't give me any shit about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have to ask her, can I go play Magic this weekend? She knows just what I got to do, and she doesn't have to ask me, can I go do this? So I think we get along really good like that. And the kids are the same way, which I think is probably a good thing to breed into them, but maybe more focus, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe find something you're really passionate about and stick with it instead of, you know, I don't know. There's a fine line there. It's nice, like you say, to be a Renaissance man and jump and know a lot of things about, or a little bit about a lot of things.
Yeah.
As opposed to everything about one subject. You know, I mean.
Yeah.
So you just bounce around. I mean, that's, find a lot of things interesting, and when they're interesting, I like to follow up on them.
Have you identified what it is about things that bore you at some point? Like, have you figured out why you jump from one thing to another?
I think I like the challenge, and Magic is like the biggest challenge because I'm never going to get better at that. I don't know what it is about the game. I'm not able to grasp it fully for some reason. I mean, I can grasp ridiculous concepts and other things, but not Magic. It's just sometimes it just doesn't make sense. When I watch the Star City things and the guys, he can do this and he can do this, I'm like, huh? You know, they're thinking three, four turns ahead. That's why I suck at chess, and I hate Scrabble and Monopoly and games like that where you have to think too far ahead. I like to just get my guys in there and ramrod. but I don't know what it is, why that is.
Do you...
You must feel the same thing. I mean...
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, different situations, like different things you just get super, super into, and then...
Right, I mean...
For whatever reason, you just quit. You're just... Like, I'm done with that thing.
Right. I don't know that that's bad. I mean, I'm sure you've had interesting things in your life. Things that, you know, you were really into for 2 or 3 years, maybe comic books or whatever it is. And then you just put all the comic books aside and say, I'm going to move on to something else.
Yeah.
Is that bad? I don't know if it's bad or not.
I don't think it is. I mean, like, I've come to terms with that it's not a bad thing, but it is something that specialization was the word that I was looking for earlier that for some odd reason was escaping me. Like,
hard to get paid for bouncing around.
Yeah, totally. Like, you just have to find those jobs, and they are both becoming, like, you just have to find that right position for the type of personality that you are, and the type of personality is someone who is good at many things and not great at one thing. Like, the thing that they're great at is being good at many things, and a lot of people don't appreciate that as much.
Well, I agree with that. I mean, there are 50 things a guy, you know, your age should know how to do. You know, change a tire, play poker, know a little bit about alcohol. It's no pop culture for the last 20 years. Know a little bit about history. I feel that if you don't know a little bit of every subject, then you should. You should be interested in that. I mean,
I'm going to kind of flip this on you. You're 44.
Yes.
What should a guy at your age know?
All the aforementioned stuff, and probably should also have traveled abroad, which I haven't really done. I would say know at least the rudiments of a second language, I would say.
Have you done that?
I know a little bit, enough Spanish to get by if I had to. I work with a lot of Spanish guys, and that's always fun when the gringo tries to talk Spanish. Well, it's just stuff like that, and you should travel a little bit. You should live a number of different places, I would think. East Coast, West Coast. I've never lived on the West Coast, so I haven't done everything either. Maybe bungee jump or skydive, or just challenge yourself. You know, learn how to, I don't know, take apart something and put it back together. Know how to maintain your computer. You know, I don't know, change a wall outlet.
See, those sound like all really practical things, but knowing how to write is...
You're right. That's...
Well, how do you... Like, that's another weird part of your personality that I've discovered is that it...
That's pretty impractical. You're right.
Yeah, and magic is pretty impractical.
That's very impractical.
Knowing movie references, that's pretty impractical.
It's right, but the idea is that you could go into any social situation and not be completely swamped.
Uh-huh.
Like, if you could go to, say, a lobster bake with a bunch of union dock workers, and the next day go to a party with lawyers and not be out of your depth. I mean, you won't be able to compete with either of them, maybe, but just... be worldly enough that you can understand a little bit about politics, maybe know a little bit about religion or current events or stuff like that. It's just interesting to be able to relate to people on all kinds of different levels. Now, I know poor people and I know rich people and everybody in between, and they all have something to bring to the table. And I don't agree with a lot of it, but I mean, it's just interesting to know a lot of different kinds of people. You know, especially to work with people from all over the world. It's just, they just have interesting stories to tell. And, you know, I would never invite many of them to my house or call them my friends, but they're just interesting to be able to relate to people on their level, which is, I guess, sort of your level too. Just, you know, I mean.
Well, you're in the same boat.
Yeah, I mean, just find that fun. Yeah. I mean, they're probably maybe not thinking the same thing, but it's just neat.
And kind of switching gears a little bit, what do you do now? Like, what's your job?
Electrician.
Electrician? Now, is that ever, like, because you and I both have had a lot of like just really crappy jobs to pay the bills.
I've had 42 jobs.
Is that ever frustrating that you, I mean, you talk about these people in your article, Bringing Out the Dead, mm-hmm. who are, you know, this lifestyle that you hate it, but at the same time, it's stable. Like it's giving them really good, like they have enough money to buy a Cadillac. Like what?
Absolutely right.
And it's, how do you respond to that? Like that you haven't been able to turn one of these passions into a paying career, for lack of a better.
I don't know that I would want to. I mean, I think hobbies are fun because you don't have to do them.
Okay.
Like, if I had the right plays for a living, I would not want to do that. If I had to write magic articles for a living, if that was my job, and the luster would wear off. I mean, after a couple of years, the luster wears off anyway. But you're right. I mean, they can buy the house and they can buy the Cadillac and they can go on two or three vacations a year. And who the hell am I to say that's not cool? Because it is cool for them.
Yeah.
And maybe because for me, I want something else. I mean, it isn't my bag to say, hey, you should want something else too. And if they're happy, they're happy. And that's one of the things I think I'm becoming more liberal on. I mean, my articles are very judgmental and prickish for many years, but now I'm sort of weaning back on that a little bit. I mean,
do you hate success?
I don't know that I hate success. I mean,
personal success. Like, do you feel like there's a certain point that you don't ever want to achieve? Like, being a professional writer. Like, that sounds like something you want to write. And you want to write as much as a professional writer, and you want to outdo every professional writer that you ever come in contact with. But it sounds like you would hate the idea of being a professional writer.
I think I would. Yes. I think that everything that I have to do, I don't like to have to do it. I just want to live my life and do whatever I want, whenever I want. And I understand that's not realistic for very many people at all. I want to wake up when I want, go to bed when I'm tired, eat when I'm hungry, go wherever I want. And the fact that that is very hard to make happen is, well, that's just the way it is. And maybe I'm a little bitter about that, but but yeah, I don't know that I hate success. It's just, I find the road up is more interesting than when you get there, mm-hmm. because you put so much into it. It's like trying to bang a hot chick and you take her out and you do this and you say all the right things and you finally bang her and you're like, she's just a stupid chick. You know, I mean, or she says the same thing about you. You know what I mean? I mean, something you want, anything. It could have been for your 10th birthday, you wanted Pac-Man so bad, and you waited and waited and waited and got it, and went, wow, this is Pac-Man. Woo. It's like the first time I had sex. I was like, really? I waited all this time for this? Really? This is as good
as... Did you really feel that way when you were that young?
I was, wow, this is it? Kind of dumb. I mean, I don't feel that way anymore, but...
Uh-huh. And how does that translate into, like, having a family and wanting, I mean, you have a very, very fairly long marriage. I mean, especially in America, where the divorce rate is, you know, 50%. Like, how does that translate into wanting to have successfully raised kids and successfully have a marriage? And
I think a lot of it has to do with the dark half and the light half.
Okay.
Like, the bad angel and the good angel on each shoulder. And I would say probably many people have that, the mean part or the bad part or the dirty part and then the good part. And most people probably have, I don't know, 90% good part, 10% bad guy. And you try to find the balance in there. I mean, I have kids, I have a wife, I got to make that work, and I want it to make that work, and I want them to be happy. And I can sacrifice, you know, a little bit for that to happen.
Uh-huh.
But I also... like no restrictions and complete freedom, you know, anarchy, but not anarchy. Not anarchy though. It's just, you got to find the balance, and I'm still looking for that right now, but you just try to do the best you can, I guess. And I'm doing okay. You're doing okay. I mean, you got your headphones on and microphone and your mixing board. You're doing what you love, I guess. Right.
Yeah. Talking to people, well, and just recording it.
You might be doing something else 2 years from now.
Yeah.
Or maybe you'll be doing it for 10 years, 20 years. Maybe this will kick you into a career. Maybe you'll be a radio talk show host. Is that what you want to do? Is that a goal?
I don't know.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. See, there's $600,000-$700,000 a year. You can handle that.
See, I think right now my goal is just to find somebody who will pay me to do what I love to do.
Yep.
And
yeah. I used to think that was a sin. I even wrote it one or two of my articles, getting paid for what you love should be a sin. Now I think it's the opposite. So I've had some growth.
So why haven't you really pursued that then? I mean, because that's funny that you mentioned that life view, because I have a friend who I grew up with who has had the same, like, bad Rubbermaid job. Like, it's a decent job. Like, he basically can work a set schedule or whatever, and it pays the bills. But he believes firmly that you should never be paid for what you love to do. But at the same time, it's like we live in a country where you have to get paid to do something.
I agree with that. Yep. I didn't used to think that, but now I think it. Absolutely think it now. I mean, I don't work for free anymore, ever, for nothing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
This is not work, so, you know, I don't expect a check for this.
And but, what do you consider work now?
Giving anything, expertise or whatever, or any of my skills to someone else, then I should be remunerated. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like if the ferret said, hey, write an article for free. I'd be like, dude. And there was a time I did write them for free. I don't know, for a year I wrote them for free and said, take the money you're going to pay me and give it away or whatever. I would not do that again. No. You would say, write an article for free. I would say, you know, like, eat me, Harvey. But I wouldn't say that because he's the ferret and I love him.
Mm-hmm.
But if I was to write another article and Star City was to accept it, I would expect to get paid. And I have for the last few articles I've thrown in. So, you know, that's good, I guess.
Have you thought about coming back to that?
I don't think that I have that much passion anymore to do that.
Okay.
Maybe. You never know. I might go to this. The last tournament was at Pittsburgh Grand Prix something or other. It was fun for like 2 hours. And then the waiting in line and the 40 minutes between matches and standing in line to see the pairing. There's always some dickhead in the front who just won't move. He's got to look at everybody's matches. So, you know, about 2 hours and I was ready to go. I mean, I stuck it out for the whole thing. But, you know, sometimes I don't want the day to end. Sometimes I don't even want it to begin. So I don't, and I didn't used to be that way. So this is just a fun little thing that's filling some void right now.
Do you know what you get out of magic? What it gives to you that fills the void?
The creativity. Whenever I don't have somewhere to channel my creativity, I guess, magic is right there waiting to build decks. That's why I hate limited so much, because there's no creativity. But, you know, in between whatever I'm jumping around, I mean, you have the music that's creative, you have the writing which is creative, and whenever I'm bored with either of those or burned out or whatever, you just slip right back into magic and build decks.
Yeah. And you don't see creativity in drafting? In choosing, like, your personal preference? Like, because different drafters are draft very differently. And
right, to a point, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you can't really... I mean, you're at the mercy of the guy on your left and your right. And you can manipulate that a little bit. I get that. You have to adjust on the fly. I get that. There's creativity there. And there's creative plays and limited. I understand that, too. But there's nothing more creative than, say, Legacy. Here's 10,000 cards. Go build a deck that doesn't get killed.
Uh-huh.
That's ballsy right there. I mean, that's... You can't get much more than that. I mean, maybe Vintage, but I've never really played Vintage, so I don't know. But I mean, Legacy, to me, there's... How many viable decks are there? 15? 20?
A lot.
Maybe more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just decks we know about. And they keep adding cards and new decks, and that's just, it's a hell of a challenge. And I'll keep plugging away at that until I either get bored with it. Well, that's exactly when I'll keep plugging. When I ever get bored with it, I'll just walk away again and wait a couple years, and Magic will still be there, hopefully.
Yeah. And this is kind of a question out of left field, but kind of has a little, I mean, it has to do with what we're talking about. As you've gotten older, do you see time differently? Like, you mentioned a lot of the annoyances of a Magic tournament and how they kind of take your time.
I could say yes. I mean, it seems to go faster. The good stuff goes fast. Weekends go like that, but work days are slow. It just seems time is, every day is more precious. I mean, I have an hour commute every day, and it's just, I'm looking, 10 years and I'm going to look back and go, okay, I worked there 5 years, and 2 hours a day for 5 years, I'll never get any of that back. That's just little stuff like that. But, I mean, I do see time differently. And, you know, I was 20. I didn't care about it. It didn't matter because I could stay up for 30 hours in a row and then go to work. Now I got to get my 6 or 7 or 8 hours every day or it's, I'm all done.
Yeah.
That, I mean, definitely I can see at this point in my life is if I have another 20 good years, I'll be blessed, you know. All downhill after that. I mean, it's starting to go downhill now, and I'm only 44, so.
You feel like you're on the downhill?
Well, I mean, physically.
Okay.
I mean, you're not going to get healthier. I mean, maybe you could, I could lose a few pounds. But, I mean, the aches and pains are going to start coming, and the wrinkles and whatever, and the incontinence. So, boy, I'm looking forward to that. So, you know what I mean? I mean,
yeah.
I'll probably be saying the same thing when I'm 60. If I have another 20 good years. But, you know, if I live to be 88, then I'm half of my life. I don't think I'm going to live to be 88.
Mm-hmm.
So you're 28, so you haven't hit your halfway point yet.
True. You
have another 10 years before your halfway point, maybe more.
Here's hoping.
Yes. Who knows? By the time you're my age, you could have perfected everything, and you could just live forever. You'd be like cyborg guy. I might not live to see that, but you might.
Yeah. Did you ever feel like when you were writing about Magic, and when you were playing like really heavily, or even now, that you're too old? Like, no?
I used to. Way back in the beginning when I was like 30, 31 or 32, I was like, wow, I'm too old for this. So I sit down across from a 12-year-old, and I'm like, yeah, this is awkward, I guess. 31 to 12, especially when he beat me. It was embarrassing. I don't think so now because look at how many old guys are playing. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Got all the old guys because the Hall of Fame, all those old pros, they're all in it. I mean, even the guys, the big guys now, I mean, a lot of them are in their 30s. I mean, they're not too many. There's a few young guns, I guess, but a lot of the guys that have been around for 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, they're hitting their 30s and maybe some of them are in their 40s now. I mean, Wakefield's like 40. Is he still right? I don't even know.
I don't think so, but I mean, I haven't really checked.
Yeah, I see him posting deck lists on Facebook. I don't know if that means he still writes or not. I haven't seen, but maybe. But I mean, like, how old's Chapin? He's 30.
Oh yeah, definitely.
5, maybe 32. And Piccola's what, 40-ish?
Yeah, I think he's a little younger than that, but yeah, he's. Yeah, it's interesting. Magic getting older.
Yeah. These are the guys that we all grew up with. Maybe not your generation, but mine, sort of, I would guess. When I first got in, these were the stars, and they're all, I mean, Zvi, he's got to be pushing 40, right?
I have no idea.
It's hard to say. He looks 20 still.
Yeah. And kind of looking to the younger crowd, I was really, really impressed and kind of inspired by the concept of the oak, the acorn, and the hatchet. Now your surliness kind of gives you this persona of a hatchet, but what?
Well, I don't want to be the hatchet.
Yeah, and what does it mean for you to be an oak in the community? Would you mind explaining that concept a little bit and kind of
just be a good guy? Be the good guy, and you have a million cards, and you open up. Say you go to a store and you open up a box, you take out get rares and the uncommons you want, give the rest to some 12-year-old who just started.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just a little stuff like that. Don't cheat little kids on trades. You know, if somebody that's not very good says, hey, can you come look at my deck? Don't look at their deck and say, this sucks, you're stupid, die. Be supportive. I mean, that's one way to help the community grow. And whether I'm in or out of Magic, I still would like to see the community get bigger. And apparently it has doubled in the last couple of years.
Uh-huh.
Which is, I mean, it was pretty big to begin with. But, you know, now that I see with Star City doing all these events and just, holy shit, I was blown away but how big they were and how many people, and 5,000 people in Vegas and just don't be a dick, basically. Be a nice guy to good players, bad players, and normal people, weird people, you know, young people, old people. Doesn't matter. Just be nice. Be polite. You don't have to be nice. Be polite.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be a dick. That's it. That's simple, right? Just don't be a dick.
And does that, this is something that I just now thought of. Does that increased readership inspire you to want to write more or want to write less?
Probably less, because I read some of the articles nowadays and I'm like, wow, this is good. Drew Levin and Brian Brown doing their articles are like awesome. And there doesn't seem to be a place nowadays for somebody like me, because they're all, everything's strategy. I mean, even Commander, strategy. Look at this deck and look at the, and fundamentals, and even whatever was on the front page today, there's the Lowry guy and the all these ways to get better and to win and to adjust your life. And no, I don't think there's a guy like me that can make dick jokes, get away with it now, you know? So certainly not on a full-time basis, maybe a once a year thing.
Okay.
And it's all just sake, but the articles are too good. The players are too good. Everybody's getting better. The cards are getting ridiculously good. Yeah, it's definitely a different game than when I was heavy into it, even 5 years ago or six, whenever it was. Have you noticed that?
A little bit. I mean, I actually really don't gravitate towards those articles. I gravitate to all the this is the meta articles, quote unquote, like the transcendental.
That's the ones I'd rather be too, but there's so few of them.
Yeah. I mean, maybe not on Star City, but I mean, I think on other sites, definitely there's definitely a place for that, I feel.
Oh, that's like the main site I visit.
So yeah.
Every once in a while, I read something on another site. Not very often, though.
I kind of explained to my non-Magic playing friends that I was interviewing a writer who had this kind of, was part Gonzo, part stream of consciousness. Yep. And this writer was admittedly sucked at Magic, but like his articles were valuable for their logic base. Like you would not talk about why your strategy was good, but why you were choosing the cards that you were, you would actually map out your thought process, which I felt was a lot more valuable than a lot of other writers who go about it a different way.
Sometimes I lied to myself there, but
how do you feel about being called a Gonzo stream of consciousness style writer?
I can't say anything bad about that, because that's pretty much what I am. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I read a lot of my articles and there's no coherence. It's just bouncing around from idea. Some of it gets annoying even to me. I don't have a problem with that. I mean, I can see it. I mean, I would have a problem with somebody calling me a strategy writer or, you know.
But
Gonzo, I guess. You know, that's, I mean, I can certainly see it.
Yeah, it puts you in some good company. I would definitely say. So, I mean, me being a fan of Hunter Thompson. So, and you like to use, like, a lot of your conventions, you know, self-deprecating. You love repetition. Why repetition? I mean, was it just to increase your word count, or?
Well, sometimes there was a little padding put on there. Just for fun. I don't know that to increase the word count was ever really the goal, except maybe one or two articles were actually referenced the word count.
Uh-huh.
But just basically it was just some of the articles like a diary. I just go back and just Monday just type something, and then Tuesday write back and type something else. And that's, maybe you could see there was this day, just randomness.
Uh-huh.
And you know, I'd come back to Thursday and it'd be the same as Monday and the repetition thing. But I don't know. I think my favorite thing would be the run-on fun sentences. Those are but the repetition, maybe that I didn't even wasn't aware that I was doing that.
You were not aware that you were doing that?
I can't really think of too many examples where there would be repetition. Are you meaning like of words? Of
phrases? Of facts? You know, like the one of the articles you repeated your constructed rating of 1528 like over and over again. Your article, you know, bringing out the dead, you repeated they don't have their magic, or they don't have magic They don't have magic?
Yeah, sort of like a theme, I guess. And the series articles would be part of the theme, like the searching for Jamie Wakefield, how each guy that I talked about had their own.
Yeah.
He's still searching. That would just be part of the, I don't know, dramatic theme or whatever a real writer would say. But the other friggin' RZA 1528, I mean, that's... 1528? Come on, I mean, how did it get to be a 1528?
Yeah.
Incidentally, I was like almost a 1900 at one point, so I'm not completely awful at magic, just pretty bad.
And you also like to use, you also like to break the fourth wall and refer to yourself in third person. Yeah. Where does that convention come from?
Because it's fun.
Okay.
That's fun, and just playing with grammar and maybe putting a semicolon after every third word, just stupid stuff like that, or changing the font size that I was only allowed to get away with once. Or just putting HTML stuff in there, just a random movie quote, just for fun.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a way to phrase a sentence where it's just straightforward and it says what you want to say, but then you could add fun to it, make it three words too long, or change, you know, like when people that speak Spanish say, we would say, why don't you? They say, why you don't. So just shift stuff around like that, and it's just fun.
Okay.
Just to entertain me, basically. And if other people get entertained by it, then that's a bonus.
And as a writer, your Star City articles, like, you're obviously very experimental, very, like, you were a developing writer, as we all are over years. When you came off that, like, first six-year where you wrote solid for 2 years and then you kind of did so intermittently until about 2006, 2007. What did you gain in those years as a writer? I mean, you mentioned your voice. Was there anything more specific?
Well, I wrote a lot of screenplays and stage plays in those times. So I learned, you know, a little bit more about structure. I think that a couple of the articles, right after I came back, certainly not the Icarid one, which was a freaking mess. Mm-hmm. 107 pages of just, ugh. You know, anybody could read that. But there's a couple there. One was about a metagame or whatever, where they're sort of structured and they're actually coherent and there's not too much of my retardedness flowing through. It's just this. I learned that from the discipline of writing the screenplays and the stage plays. Is sometimes you have to have a logical progression. And I would say that you could still have fun with it, which I would say that that's part of where the new and improved voice came from, is that you don't have to just be completely rambling. You can have some coherence and still make it fun.
Okay. You derive a lot of things, quotes, and you derive a lot of things from movies or other pieces of culture. Like,
yes.
Was that always something you were conscious of? Like, when you were writing weekly, did you mine a lot of other material for ideas?
I would say just whatever I was watching or listening to that week would probably seep in.
Okay.
If I happened to watch, say, Glengarry Glen Ross the day before I wrote the article, I'd probably slip in some of those. And then whatever else would tangent away from that to, say, maybe another Al Pacino movie or some song that was an Al Pacino movie or just something I saw on the internet. And I'm glad I'm not writing now because the memes would be all over the place. just so many of them, and so many of them are awesome that, you know, in the Rage comics, I would be hard pressed to not put 1,000 of those in every article. But yeah, I would just, whatever's surrounding me in my big bubble of interests at the time usually would find a way to seep itself in.
Okay. And you have, I pulled a quote from one of your articles that I thought was really interesting. You wrote that you have no tech to offer, no strategy, nothing of concrete value to offer. Yet you've written more about magic than I think, you know, you are definitely in the top 25 of most words written about magic.
Well, I don't know. There's a lot of guys in Star City that are in the, you know, 400 or 500 articles.
Oh, I know. Oh, well, you know, Chapin, Flores,
Abe Sargent, and yeah. Peter John have hundreds and hundreds. And Benny Smith, he's been around, what, 10, 12 years.
Yeah.
Still doing it. I don't say that I have nothing. That was sort of a sarcastic thing. I mean, I have some tech every once in a while. Mm-hmm. Just even by accident, you have to be right once in a while. I've been wrong about a lot of it, too. That's okay. But as far as strategy, I don't think there's very little I would have to offer in strategy, but things of concrete value, maybe.
Like, maybe. Did you feel at a certain point there just what you were doing writing about Magic was not creating something that had concrete value, but was creating something that was different? Something that nobody else was doing, like adding to the experiential nature.
Yes. I would agree with that.
Okay.
And a lot of those barbs myself were just back in the day, Star City was the scrub site, and I don't even remember what the sites were, maybe Mind Ripper or Brain Burst, if they weren't the same site, whatever. Star City was like the casual, no real pros wrote there. It was just the fun site, and it started to get bigger and bigger, and then it became legitimized, and now I don't know if it's got to be close to being the number one site. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, sure it is. Gathering Magic, maybe.
Serious big time guys writing there, and just to, since I was there in the beginning, it was just kind of fun to say, you know, that come to my articles not for strategy or tech or anything like that, but for obscure references and to take your head off a little bit and just breeze through it. Because, you know, it's sort of like making fun of everybody. It's the Star City's the iffy side, the crappy side, and they don't have real good writers and blah, blah, blah.
Uh-huh.
Well, where are they now? Huh. They got you.
And when people say, you know, joke when, you know, oh, that's just Rizzo. Like, your articles are good, but he sucks at Magic. Like, even he says so. Like, how did that make you feel? Like, if when you were trying anything, like, when you were trying seriously to actually win a tournament or whatever.
Well, no, I don't take that personally at all, because I'm there's a lot of ways I am pretty shitty at Magic. And I mean, the last article I wrote, I mean, the broken legs in Pittsburgh one. I mean, I wrote at least one or two mistakes in every match that were embarrassing mistakes. And some of that I would say because I hadn't played in 3 or 4 years or whatever it was, but
mm-hmm.
I think a lot of those I still would have made anyway. It's just the focus is weird somehow. I don't think I'm very good at it, and I don't think I'll ever be very good at it. I don't know that I ever want to be very good at it. It's just fun, and it fills a void.
Mm-hmm. Would you like, at any point, would you have traded your writing career for, like, your writing success for success at Magic?
I don't think so. No. If they said you could win a pro tour, but you can't ever write again, no.
Okay.
No way. I'd rather have the fun of writing than the accolades and the rewards and the $40,000 in the Hall of Fame and playing. I mean, that'd be cool, but not enough to actually put any effort into it.
And do you think that's your Bruce? Like, Magic is kind of the thing that you're supposed to be bad at so you can be good at something else?
I'm bad at a lot of things. A lot of things that I'm not very good at. Some things I've actually tried. But I don't know if it's my Bruce or not. I mean, I think life is Bruce.
Mm-hmm.
People that succeed are the ones that, I don't know, like you're reading the self-help books, are the ones that are driven and focused and make a list and prioritize and blah, blah, blah. But most people don't do that. I mean, you know, I think that Bruce is probably everywhere for everybody. I mean, everybody has a little bit. And those who succeed are the ones that keep them to a minimum, kick them to the curb most of the time.
Mm-hmm. And Jamie Wakefield, the idea. Can you expand on that a little bit? Like, what did you, when you were writing about Jamie Wakefield, the idea, like, you never, like, in that article itself, it's never fully defined.
Well, no. It's just like a ballpark broad concept.
Uh-huh.
Jamie Wakefield, he's like the everyman that puts his heart and soul into his deck, his 26 lane 62 card deck, and he goes and maybe he does good, maybe he gets his ass kicked, and it's like we got our ass kicked because you have an emotional involvement with the guy.
Uh-huh.
And you understand, because a lot of the people that read Star City aren't very good either. They'll think they are, but I mean, how many people are very good at Magic? Not very many. Not a very big percentage. Most of them are, it's like poker, you get 20% that are going to win money and the rest aren't.
Uh-huh.
They're different gradations of good, But most people that think that they're pretty good aren't very good. I mean, they're okay. They'll beat me, but I don't think that matters. But it was just the Wakefield idea was the sort of just how he would throw himself into it, and he just would try so hard and care so much and fall on his ass. And it was just keep searching for the passion he had. You know, if you read most of his articles, there's like a passion and such a drive. And whether it was because he wanted to be the best player or he just wanted to succeed, whatever it was, he's like the underdog and the everyman. And you just keep searching for that and keep trying, keep getting back up, like in Rocky VI or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Not how hard you get hit, but how many however you get back up or whatever it was. Whatever his quote, get back up and keep trying. And he just kept plugging away. And you just want a guy like that to get back to the tour with his own deck.
And you feel like that's how you got a lot of your fans? I mean, because I definitely wanted to see you succeed, but at the same time, like, I felt like this weird mixed emotion. Like, I wanted to see you succeed, but I love to watch you fail. Like, because you write so good about it.
Yeah, I might be the only guy that can consistently write tournament reports about 2-5 records. I mean, most people don't write one unless they top 8.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I wanted to enjoy it more than succeed, I guess, at the game. It's just fun to have fun and to try new things. And I mean, it sucks to go 2-5 or 3-5 or whatever. Sometimes it sucks. Sometimes you don't care. But not everybody wants the same thing out of Magic. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, I realized I'm actually working on an article right now about not playing. A month ago, I decided to step away again from tournament Magic because it was just like too consuming. And what I wanted to do in life is it was do things like photography, like writing, that were more than gambling. Because at a certain point, you know, like they say about gambling, you don't gamble if you can't afford to lose what you're gambling with. And I realized actually 3 or 4 weeks later that I hadn't played Magic at all. Like, I was spending more time, like, editing podcasts, editing content, writing weekly updates for my site, stuff like that, that I was like, oh, my gosh, I need to play Magic.
Yeah.
And then so I did last week, and it was, like, more fun than I remember Magic being in a long time.
Right.
So.
Right. It definitely consumed. It can be very – I don't think there's no moderation in Magic, I don't think. Maybe the kitchen table commander guys did play maybe every Saturday. Around the kitchen table, have some beers and some chips, and maybe that. See, I could dig that. Something like, except I don't like really Commander too much.
Yeah, but I wonder if they're like even then, you know, they're constantly thinking about
they probably
like what cards they could put in their decks. Like they're looking out, probably. Looking for articles, looking for podcasts.
Yep. Yeah, it doesn't. You're right. I mean, I think you get sucked in. You're sucked in. Just I never met anybody that could just take it or leave it.
Mm-hmm.
If you were playing, you were in, and you're right. You're at work, and you jot down a list.
Yeah.
Get up in the morning and see if the sites are refreshed. Yeah. It definitely can. It takes a lot. I mean, I don't know how much it gives back, if it's worth it for, you know, probably for a lot of people it is. But, you know, for a lot of people it isn't. And that's whenever it becomes an inequitable trade, that's when you walk away.
Yeah. And at what point... When you were playing like really heavily, what would you tell people when they would ask you, what do you do on the weekends? Like, you weren't a nerd growing up. You are actually one. You admitted you were a person to make fun of nerds. So what happened when you found yourself in their shoes?
Nobody really asked. I mean, a few people in my life knew, but you know, I was never really big and I didn't have too many close friends hang out on the weekend kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Associates, but you know, the people that needed to know knew, you know, the family members and whatever, and that's basically it. I mean
and you kind of talked about that in one of your articles, right? About people knowing that you played Magic,
right? Yeah, a few people did. I mean, people that I thought needed to know or that would care or found it relevant. I mean, you don't tell the guys at work. I mean, maybe you do, maybe it comes up. You know, if it comes up, you don't say, "Hey, I play Magic. You guys play Magic? Who's Magic?" Well, no.
Yeah. Did you ever find yourself hiding it? Like,
Maybe a little bit. I can't think of a specific situation, but I'm sure I did. It wouldn't be a situation where somebody says, "Hey, did you ever hear Magic the Gathering?" Because I would say, "Yeah, I heard of it." Probably. Yeah, I would say that there was probably a little dirty shame way back in the beginning, because it seemed like something I wouldn't do.
Uh-huh.
It's the fantasy kind of thing that I'm into, really. Don't read the novels. Don't, you know, like the Fire and Ice series or whatever, R.R. Martin. I don't read any of that stuff. I haven't read any of the Tolkien stuff. I don't watch the movies, but not really into the fantasy stuff. This is kind of weird.
Okay.
I think so. Without,
15 years later, you're probably your most famous article, you know, Stuck in the Middle with Bruce, has been read, you know, is one of the few Magic articles that I've sent to people that don't even know what Magic is. And I've said, "Hey, read this." Like 15 years later, what do you think of it?
I think the point is valid. Some of the writing is a little iffy, but I mean, I still feel the same way.
Okay.
And I've gotten, I don't know, I get a couple emails a year from people that somehow find me that I never heard of. Hey, I read the article, blah, 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 or whatever. Or it gets reposted somewhere else or something like that. Or somebody randomly sends me something on Facebook. I mean, it's nice that it's still out there and people like it. I don't think it's my best article, but it's probably the most serious one. But it's cool that it's still out there and people like it. And I still agree with most of it. I just would like to maybe take a mulligan and write it a little bit better.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, if I got to remember for one article, that's fine. I'll take that one.
Okay. And what article would you want to be remembered by? Like, is there one that you felt, well, like, you were like, yes, this is it, and it just got no love?
There weren't any really that I felt that strongly about that got no love. But I would think one of the more funny ones, I would say. I don't even remember the names of most of them, but there were a few that I thought were just, they were just really funny and clever. And I'll take the Bruce one. That's it. I would say, yeah. If I had to take one article and show it to somebody, like a non-Magic player, like an editor for a newspaper or something, and say, "Read this. This is a sample of my writing," I would take that one. And warts and all, just because it's probably the least crazy of, you know, there are a couple serious ones, and that's probably one of the most serious ones.
Mm-hmm.
I might have thrown some fun in there, I guess.
And yeah. How did you feel about your fans and their, like, because you were kind of grappling with the idea of being successful and actually liking yourself for it? But like, you found your
liking myself for it.
Uh-huh.
All the things that came along with it. I mean,
And what do you think of your fans? Like,
that's awesome. I mean, it takes balls to just email somebody and say, "Hey, I liked your article. That was awesome. That was cool." That takes balls to do, to throw yourself out to there, somebody, and then you just get a type, "Thank you for the bye." Because mm-hmm. I've done that before when I first started. Send a couple guys, "Awesome article, man. It's all, thank you." And that was it.
Uh-huh.
Asshole. I mean, I understood what that was like. And I thought, this is still awesome to get an email that says, you know, "This is a cool article," or whatever. I didn't like the people that went over the top, and it just made me feel weird, you know, that would come up to me, "Oh my God, you're freaking Rizzo." And I understand that too, to a certain extent, although I would never do that to anybody because I know how weird it makes me feel.
Mm-hmm.
Like a movie star, whatever, you see him out at a restaurant, it's, "Hi, movie star," and that's it. It's just very awkward, and if you haven't experienced it, it's really hard to describe.
Yeah, I have yet to experience it. I mean,
you might.
So, I might. Who knows?
"You're that podcast guy. Oh my God."
Yeah.
The first couple of times you'd be like, "Yeah, that's me." And then maybe a year later you'd be like, "No, that's not me. It's some other guy."
Uh-huh.
It's just tough to, I don't know, deal with adulation. Sometimes you feel like you didn't deserve it. You know, like if I wrote 3 or 4 iffy articles in a row and somebody says, "Oh, that last article was awesome." No, it wasn't. It was crappy.
Uh-huh. How did that change things when somebody would pick out, like, you know, 2 or 3 weeks worth of really, like, crappy work that you felt was crappy and say, "Oh, that was great"? Like, would you think of them differently, or would you think of yourself differently?
I mean, I remember being young and enamored by, I don't know, one of the Steelers or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Like, well, if I ever met this Steeler, I would be like, oh, blah, blah, blah. And I understand that. And I don't take any of that, you know. Maybe he did like it. Mm-hmm. I have, probably have different standards. I mean, obviously I have different standards than a lot of people. So, I mean, even if somebody, it was the worst article I've ever written, and somebody said it was cool, there was probably something cool about it. I mean, the whole article wasn't, but I don't ever get mad at people for saying, you know, I like this that you did or whatever, or cool thing. It's just weird sometimes.
Yeah. I just didn't know, like, I mean, I know.
I'll never get mad at people for, no.
Oh,
never.
Totally. Okay. Yeah, I can definitely tell you that I can parse out John Rizzo, the personality, from John Rizzo, the writer, and appreciate each.
Yeah. It's just because, and another thing, you know, I went to Nationals 2006, 2007, whatever. Ted Knutson gave me his freaking flyer miles to go down there and do some reporting, whatever. And I met him after, you know, years of online, and it struck me, I was halfway through the first or second day, I'm thinking, I don't meet people well. He's probably thinking, oh my, that's Rizzo. What a disappointment. And and Kelly Diggs was there, and Brian David Marshall, and some other people that I had never met before. And they must be thinking, well, he seems really cool online. He's just like a regular, shy dickhead in real life. And so that's kind of that, too. I mean, it's easy to have, like, the internet muscles and say things that you might not say in real life or to somebody. It's just kind of different, and I'm not really that as outgoing as you might think I would be from my articles. It's just like to sort of take a breather and check things out.
Have you thought about turning coverage into a career? I mean, have you thought about approaching Magic from a different angle?
I would hate to do that.
Really?
Coverage now. It's too hard. It's really hard. I mean, it just goes so fast. And even when I was at Nationals, that one, I reported the wrong winner. I wrote the article, the coverage, just the wrong guy won. Luckily, it got caught. they're just too fast. And maybe because some of the coverage I read nowadays is just so bland and boring.
Well, I feel like your strength as a person doing coverage is that you, like, the Gonzo approach, like, you are in it. Like, you are kind of in the shit with all the players.
Yeah.
And you have a very good way of, like, your writing puts me there, like, puts me in maybe in the trenches. And it's partially because you're playing in the event.
Well, but a lot of people don't like that. They want the, he played this, then he played that, then he played this and killed that. I would have to spice it up, make it fun, make it interesting. And that's, I don't think there's a place for that in professional coverage, like on Wizards site.
Uh-huh.
I think they have to be more like he played this, then he played that. You can't get too creative. I mean, maybe you can, but I haven't seen too many guys do it. Every once in a while, they'll throw a little pun in or whatever, and I always appreciate stuff like that. That doesn't seem like it would be very interesting to me. I mean, I did it a couple times, and it was maybe fun for one or two matches, and then it was it's too hard. I mean, the guys that do it, salute, especially limited matches where you don't really know the cards and they're just flipping them, they're throwing them. But, you know, maybe like in the booth, that would be kind of fun because you could sort of really go crazy with that.
Yeah.
Have a lot of fun with that. I mean, but writing it down.
I think that's a misuse of you personally. Like, if I were to hire you for, like, to do coverage for a tournament, I'd be like, I want to know, like, what it's like to go to Amsterdam, like, to be in Amsterdam for Worlds. Like, I want to know what that's like. Like, I want to know, like, I don't want to know a play-by-play. Like, that's kind of interesting, and I feel that there's writers that can write that really well. But I feel like living vicariously, I feel like you would be a fantastic writer. Anyway, enough stroking your ego, I guess.
I could use it. I don't use it as much as I used to, so maybe I'll take it. No, I won't. Enough of that. No more gushing. Just be a journalist now.
All right. So, Magic, let's talk about this legacy brew you got going.
Okay. Well, it's probably not very good. I mean, it's fun. It's competitive.
Okay. Well, you designed it, so let's just assume.
A lot of fun playing it, I'll tell you that. black-white tokens, that's all it is.
Okay.
With the usual suspects. I just enjoy playing it. and I expect to go maybe 4-4 with it, something like that.
Okay.
That's just where I'm at, am now. I'm working on other decks and just can't really get a grasp of them. But like I said, Mono Black was my first love, and but I had to give up on that because I can't beat Batterskull. You know what I mean? Mono Black just can't beat Batterskull.
Yeah, it's hard to get it off the battlefield. Like,
yep. Kill all the guys, but, you know, they just keep making more. So that was the problem. But who knows? I mean, I have a couple more weeks, and this is just a filler deck just to just jump in there and see how fast it is to play Legacy. You'll watch it on the screen, but then playing it, it's a lot different than watching them commentate on it. So I just like the difference between college football and pro football, I guess, is jump in there and see. And if I get totally blown out, then maybe I won't go in anymore. But I probably will, just because I'm not freaking money on cards again after I sold all mine.
But, now, you know, what was that like? Like, you sold your collection.
Like, I did.
What was that like? I mean, that's a pretty big step for anybody.
Yeah, well, I had to. I was unemployed and couldn't find a job and got like 3,000. Now I would probably get about 50,000.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had everything. It's very embarrassing to talk about how I got so little for it, but that was, you know, a couple months' pay at the time, so that helped a lot.
Yeah.
But now that I'm rich again, I can buy the cards again. Although I did find like 20,000 cards that I didn't know I had and put them up on eBay a little bit at a time and probably made $1,000 out of it, so that helped a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't have to spend too much. But I don't know, $140 for a Jace, really?
Yeah.
Seriously.
when you sold that stuff, and when you were looking for a job, were you looking at your Magic kind of experience as something that you could do? Like, were you, like, when you were unemployed and looking for a job, were you considering doing things you love for work, or were you just kind of scrambling to find anything?
Scrambling, yes, anything.
Okay.
Yeah. I ended up working at a gun factory where they made, as Bushmaster, where they made the AR-15s or whatever.
Okay.
It's like an assembly line. It was just, that's awful. I think that was the last job I had in Maine, and then we moved down to Virginia. That was, I've had so many bad jobs that I would not wish them on anybody. And I hope I never have to end up like that again, but yeah, I just had to get a job, had to sell the cards, had to get some money, blah, 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 and did it. And at least it was a noble purpose. I mean, I didn't just do it because, like I said, screw Magic.
Yeah.
We're going to play again. I didn't want to sell them, but, you know, who knew everything, you know, Legacy was going to become a real format and everything would triple. I didn't.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I sold my stuff when my dual lands were all, you know, $35, $40 a piece, and that's it.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And
I bought all mine for like $10 each.
Yeah.
For all 40 of them. Eh, whatever. We all have stories and we all have regrets. And people always say, don't sell your collection. But, you know, I didn't have really a choice at the time. But that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'll get there again for the next 2 years, and then I'll get bored and I'll just keep them aside. Of course, then Magic will crash and it'll stop making the game. They'll be worthless. And you know how that goes. I'm really bad at investing. I'm just terrible at investing. So.
So you've been brewing. Like, does that mean you're kind of coming back, or is it just for this one?
The Star City events seem fun. Plus they're close by. One's in Baltimore, that's not really close. It's an hour and 15 minutes or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But the other one is in Chantilly, which is, I don't know, 30 minutes away. The Grand Prix. So how do you not go to a Grand Prix that's 30 minutes away?
Yeah, totally.
Legacy. I mean, if I get my ass kicked, I can get my ass kicked, but that's okay. I mean, it's 30 minutes away, and I can think of a lot worse ways to kill a Saturday than to, you know, to play Magic for 8 or 9 or 10, 12 hours. So that'll be fun.
Yeah.
Hopefully. The Baltimore, I don't like Baltimore at all, but whatever. I got to get my feet wet. But, yeah, brewing every day, and for months, probably for the last year, ever since I found my cards and started putting them on eBay, it's just, you know, you sell a couple cards and go, hey, what's this green scene zenith seems really cool. Maybe I'll buy some of those. You know, then you buy Garruk. I'm not saying Garruk. It's Garruk. It's pronounced Garruk. So you start with the mono green because I still had a lot of cards the cards that I had people sign, Star City didn't want those, so they left me with the Natural Order green build, pretty much the whole deck, and a burn deck. So I had those two to start with, and then you just build a little bit. And I still have a burn deck that, I don't know, it could be a backup deck, but you know, burns aren't a lot of fun to play. So you just brew and come up with all these little things and these combos, and then I keep realizing that I have to buy the cards that everybody else has because they're just so good. You know, Scorch Mystic and Deathrite Shaman and Liliana, and but no blue cards because the duels are too expensive.
Yeah.
I can't
and was
buy
there,
it.
But, yeah. Was there any significance to, like, selling your cards, I mean, to Star City?
Like, yeah, I love Star City. They're my boys. I mean, they gave me a shot when I was nobody, and when I was writing for free all that time, and I said, all of a sudden, I couldn't write for free, and I said, Pete, I need to get paid, and he's like, 10-4, man. Mm-hmm. Pete has always been a straight-up stand-up guy, and the whole crew at Star City, they're just ridiculously awesome, and they got my loyalty forever, so... Anytime I write anything, I'll say, hey, you guys want it? If they don't, then I'll go somewhere else. And if nobody wants it, nobody wants it. Post it on Facebook, I guess.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they got dibs because they're just cool. I mean, they've always been cool with me, all the editors, and learned a lot from those guys. And they're my brothers. So there's that.
Yeah. And have you thought about working for Star City? I mean, I'm sure there are things that you could do.
I make so much money now that I don't think they could afford me.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, I don't know that I wouldn't hire me if I was Star City because, you know, he's going to stay for 2 years and get bored and quit. You know, it's probably what I would do too. So, you know, I mean, guys like Evan Irwin who make videos every day, every week for, what's he on, like 5 or 6 years now? 7 years?
Yeah.
I mean, that's admirable. I mean, that's a lot of work. I mean, I know how much work it was doing writing an article and video and editing them and taking his camera with him. And yeah, that's just in Flores, who can work a full-time job and still pump out all those articles.
Yeah.
That guy should get in the Hall of Fame just because of that. I mean, make an exception, whatever, put him in the Hall of Fame. You know what I mean? I mean,
I agree. Yeah, totally.
He might talk about himself or have a big ego or whatever, but he's been there for 15 years and nobody else has. So, I mean, Rosewater has too. So.
Do you wish you were different? Like, are you kind of envious of those people that can consistent?
No, like, I just admire them from a distance. I just say, wow, that's awesome. And just everybody that can write that much all the time, have that much passion for that much time in a row. No, that's just awesome.
Yeah.
And I don't really envy them. But I just admire them.
And you're an irregular writer, it sounds like, then, right?
Yes. No, well, I take it seriously, irregular. Every 2 years, I'll write a bunch of plays or revisit old plays and then send them out and get a couple hits and then be bored again. Sort of like the magic thing. I mean, who knows? I could go to this event and pump out 10 more articles in a row or one. Uh-huh. But, I mean, look back at the last... I don't know, 6 or 7 years. I just like one article every couple of years or whatever. I go to an event, and that seems to be about good right now.
All right. And what sort of advice would you give to people who are writing, like that want to start out, that have that bug?
Keep doing it. Yeah. If you have the bug, and I know what it's like to have the bug, just do it. Just keep sending it out. And so it's like probably dozens of people that are writing now had their first couple submissions rejected, you know, and they probably thought, oh, I suck, blah, blah, blah. Just keep plugging away because there's dozens of sites now. Somebody will accept it. And if nobody accepts, just keep, do a blog. I mean, just keep at it. If you love it, then do it. If you love it, somebody else will love it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, Rizzo, and then the other question that my friend wanted me to ask you was, where can they find your work?
I don't think it's online anywhere.
Okay. You don't have any writing online or any anything published that people can find?
I don't think so. Nope.
Okay.
You're not really supposed to do that with plays. I don't know why that is. And that's one of the conventions I've actually adhered to, is you don't post them online for some reason.
Huh.
Because I guess you're supposed to sell them. I think I would do that, but if you try to find a play that isn't in the public domain online, I don't think you'll find it anywhere. I mean, I've looked for David Mamet plays, and you can't go buy them for $10 or whatever. But yeah, I don't think there's any of my stuff online anymore. Just the Star City stuff, and that's it.
Can anybody buy your plays anywhere?
Not really for sale. And just this is the thing I did, and I'm over it for a little while.
Okay.
Maybe someday I'll put them all in a book. I doubt that, though. That seems like a lot of work, too. But that's just have to make do with the Star City stuff, I guess. Sorry.
Totally fine. Well, RZA, do you have anything else you'd like to say?
Not really. It's been kind of cool talking magic. I haven't done that in a long time.
And, yeah. I'm sorry we didn't talk more about magic.
No, that's fine. This is all about magic. This is close enough. Even yeah. The article stuff is close enough. So, yeah. Thumbs up.
Yeah. And I wish you success. Oh, or very very entertaining failure.
That I'd rather have that. Well, I wish you success, too, because you actually want success. So.
Oh, thank you.
Keep at it.
I'm.
Keep plugging away on iTunes and Man Deprived and see where it goes.
Cool. Well, thank you very much for the compliment.
Interviewing you.
Yeah, it'll be a weird feeling. I've
that would be ironic, as Alanis Morissette would say, right?
Yeah. When she would use it correctly.
Yes. Well, I don't. Maybe she would ever someday. I don't think ironic means anything anymore. You just use it however you want.
Yeah.
Make book on it. That's my prediction for the year 2020. Ironic means whatever you want it to mean. And that's it for the predictions.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Rizzo. And
well, thank you very much. And we'll catch you on the flip side.
Yeah, much success. Hopefully you, right, you pick too. The pen back up. So.
We'll see.
All right.